Saram dear listeners, and welcome once again to Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom, our weekly series where we offer you one beautiful melody that used to be sung in the earlier years in the divine physical presence of Bhagwan in the Sanctum Sanctorum of Prashantinilayam. And today we have a lovely one, a short sweet bhajan describing and adoring our Lord as Lord Krishna, our Sai Krishna, as Gopala, as Narayana, as Janardana. So here is how the first line of the bhajan flows.
Jai ho, Gopalana.
So this is the bhajan we will learn now. It's a four-line bhajan. Let's get familiar with the lyrics of the bhajan and then we'll move on to the tune, the raga, the beat of the bhajan, and then we'll take every word of this bhajan and see what this bhajan is trying to convey to us. So let's get started with the lyrics.
జయ హో గోపాలన జయ హో నారాయణ జయ హో జనార్దన జయ హో నిరంజన.
Now that we know the lyrics, so here is how this bhajan sounds when sung. Brother Srinivasulu will now sing for us the lines of this bhajan. Brother Anirudh will follow him after every line. It's a simple bhajan, dear listeners. Please pay attention and you will love the bhajan. You will love its tune and you'll be so happy that so quickly you have learnt a new bhajan.
This bhajan is being sung in the scale G sharp pancham.
Jaya ho, Gopalana. Jaya ho, Gopalana. Jaya ho, Gopalana. Jaya ho, Gopalana. Jaya ho, Narayana. Jaya ho, Narayana. Jaya ho, Narayana. Jaya ho, Narayana.
Jaya ho, Janardana.
Jaya ho, Janardana.
Jaya ho, Janardana.
Jaya ho, Janardana.
Jaya ho, Niranjana.
Jaya ho, Niranjana.
Jaya ho, Niranjana.
Jaya ho, Niranjana.
Jaya ho, Gopalana.
So that is the short and sweet bhajan on Lord Krishna, a bhajan which used to be sung in the earlier years in Prashantinilayam. Especially Mr. Mohan Rao has sung this bhajan many times in front of Bhagwan. In fact, one is reminded of him when one hears this bhajan. His compositions too were all similar type, wherein the bhajans were just four-liners with simple words and simple tunes. And he's someone who had the opportunity to sing in the divine physical presence for decades, right from the 60s till perhaps early 2000. someone who sang in the Nagar Sankirtans all these years, as well as for the morning bhajans. He was the pillar of the morning bhajan session for perhaps half a century in Prashantanilayam. Brother Srinivasulu, who used to sing along with him, today very beautifully for all of us, revives these lovely compositions, and this is one such beautiful melody. So for those of us who are keen students of music, let us learn a little more about the composition, what makes it so simple and beautiful. Anirudh is here with us to share his thoughts on the make of this bhajan. So tell us, Anirudh, what occurs to you when you hear this bhajan?
Sairam Bishu.
Sairam.
As you said, the simple four-liner Namavalis, which really made an impact in those days, and also it makes an impact now also, because you have many bhajans which are more than four lines, which is a mix of many ragas, and the lyrics are composed based on the thoughts of the composer, like Arij Suno,
yes,
or Daya Karo. So amidst all these bhajans we sing in Mandir now, this stands out to be a very simple, unique Namavali, and we are all blessed to hear such compositions and able to sing in Mandir. So this, coming to the technical structure of this bhajan is based on Rag Darbari, I can say. Need not be the whole Darbari fitting into the four lines. Just a glimpse of Darbari is seen in this bhajan. So in the Darbari you have these notes.
Sa re
Shudri.
Sa re ga
Komal ga.
Ma pa da
Komal da.
Ni ni pa
Komal ni.
Ma pa sa ni pa ga ga ga. Ma ma ri
have in Darbari a very powerful raga, many bhajans and compositions. But to give the similar flavor with this bhajan, I think we can have bhajans like
Gopala, Gopala, Nacho, Gopala, Nacho, Nacho, Sai Nandalala, Hari Om Namah Shivaya, Alak Niranjana Bhava Bhaya Vanjana Narayan, Narayan.
All these bhajans are not very classically based on Darbari.
Yes.
But you have the glimpse of the notes, the minor notes from taken from Darbari.
Yes. I think no bhajan perhaps does justice to the glory of the raga.
Yeah.
They only do justice to the glory of Bhagwan.
Exactly.
To the glory of the deity.
Yeah. And they need not also.
Yes.
Yeah. Because our motive is not the technical perfection we achieve through music.
Yes.
Our motive is totally to inspire somebody to sing for God.
Yes.
And in that process, we also get, Swami helps us to liberate through these bhajans.
Yes. In fact, I was the other day talking to a former student of Bhagwan's music college.
Oh.
I know he is someone who's done 6 years in Swami Smirpuri College of Music, you know, learnt all the ragas.
Wow.
And so he was saying, initially the bhajan sessions used to become very difficult for him.
Okay.
I said, why? Because he says, you know, some of these bhajans, they don't fit into the ragas, you know, they are deviating. And if someone, you know, sings slightly off note also, you know, it sort of disturbs you.
Correct, correct.
And he said, you know, I was not enjoying the bhajan sessions. Having learnt music, it is actually becoming a demerit for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was not enjoying it. Oh, everybody is so happy in the bhajan session, but I'm in a complete conundrum. And then yeah. He said, it took me some time to understand that this is not music.
Correct.
This is bhajans. And correct. Then he shifted his focus
correct.
From listening to it as music to listening to it as a prayer, listening to it, you know, concentrating only on how he can also connect through the bhava.
Correct.
So once that perspective changed, now Correct. He enjoys bhajan. So now he thinks, okay, how I can perhaps take a bhajan and, you know, using the raga beautify the bhajan.
Absolutely.
But not take the bhajan and see how much it fits to the raga.
Correct, correct.
But I think that's the journey perhaps every musician makes.
Yeah. So initially it happens, yeah. And then as you said, it's all about the approach towards the bhajans. How yes. we see the bhajans.
Yes.
Whether we see it as a technical composition.
Yes.
Or we see it as a soulful prayer.
Yes.
Wonderful.
And I think when you see it as a soulful prayer, that's when everything falls into place, and that's when yeah. you know your soul also connects to that prayer.
Wonderful. Absolutely.
And I think Darbari is one of those famous ragas. We have so many lovely compositions, so many lovely bhajans. Perhaps you should do an alap in Darbari.
Yeah, I will. This time I will try to do a dhun
sure.
on Hare Ram, Hare Krishna in Darbari, which is a very popular tune in the Darbari. It goes like this.
It reminded me of how the whole crowd used to join when Bhagwan used to sing Prema Mutamansakaho
yeah.
in the last lines.
Yeah. That's we cannot the forget raga. This bhajan, Prema Mudita Manasakho, whenever yes. we speak of Darbari. Darbari because yes. the Ram Ram Ram, Ram Ram Ram, such energy, such power.
Yes.
The whole, the even now when we the Thursdays and Sundays when we have Swami's bhajan in the mandir yes. session, till that is the 5:15 to 6, you would have followed many bhajans. But when Swami starts the bhajan, yes. it's a whole different energy altogether, yes. and that is Bhagwan.
Yes, the source of all bhajans.
Yeah,
wonderful. So let's take this bhajan and unravel its swaras.
Yeah, so the swaras will help the singer to understand the tune in a better way, and also the harmonium accompanist to help the singer in accompanying the harmonium in a better manner.
Yeah.
So let's take the first line.
Jaya ho, Gopalana. Sa 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 ri sa ni ni ri ga ri sa.
Sa 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 ri sa ni ni ri ga ri sa.
Jaya ho Narayana. Ga 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 ma pa ma ri ri sa sa da ni ri sa.
Ga 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 ma pa ma ri ri sa sa da ni ri sa.
Jaya ho Janardana. Sa sa ri sa ri pa 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 ma pa ni pa ga ma ri sa.
Sa sa ri sa ri pa 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 ma pa ni pa ga ma ri sa.
Jaya ho Niranjana. Ga 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 ma pa ma ri ri sa sa da ni ri sa.
Ga 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 ma pa ma ri ri sa sa da ni ri sa.
Wonderful. So it sounds so sweet, so lovely to just do the swaras also. And I think when bhajans are simple, they have a lovely charm of their own.
Exactly.
So let's do the beat.
Yeah, the beat of this bhajan is 8-beat, Adi Talam or Keherva in the Hindustani classical music. So let's have the count and we will do the bhajan with the help of Kanjira. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Jaya ho, jaya ho.
Thank you very much, Anirudh and Arvind Sai.
Thank you, Vishu.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
So we are now done with the raga and the tala of this bhajan. It's time to move on to how to approach this bhajan, how to internalize this bhajan, how to ensure that this bhajan liberates us. How to ensure that every time we sing this bhajan, we feel uplifted. So let's take the first line.
Jaya ho, Gopalana.
Jaya means victory. Jaya ho means victory be too. So it is a line where we are hailing
victory, victory to the Lord. Jai ho, Gopalana. And Gopal is that beautiful name of Lord Krishna. While conventionally it is understood as Gopala means the one who is a caretaker of cows, Bhagwan has given so many beautiful interpretations, and one of them is that Go means senses and Pala means take care. So Gopala is the one who takes care of our senses, who ensures that our senses are focused in the right direction. He is the one who takes the senses away from the material world. It is His name, His form and His leelas which are so enticing that one gets so lost in it that one becomes totally oblivious to the attractions of the world outside. And once you experience Him, or at least get a glimpse of Him, you lose taste for anything of this world. That is what is Gopala. There was one student of Bhagwan who joined his institution way back in the 80s, and right from the time he joined, Bhagwan, like he does for every student, started shaping him, started shaping his soul. He had number of interviews with Bhagwan after he joined his school, and coming from North India, he was used to a very liberal and carefree environment, and now Bhagwan had given him so many opportunities, so many interviews, so he was really enjoying his stay. And now the first Sunday of his stay in Bhagwan's hostel arrived. The students come to the mandir for darshan on Sunday mornings. And on this particular Sunday, Bhagwan emerged at the time when he generally came out for darshan, and everyone had a great darshan, and this boy was also sitting in the portico. And after darshan, as it used to happen in those days, Swami took a few devotees for an interview, and the boys continued to sit in the portico. Now this boy suddenly looked at the lady's side, and when he looked, he spotted his mother. So he immediately actually was so happy. He saw his mother and he waved at his mother. And his mother too actually recognized him, and mother waved back. So it was a beautiful interaction. On a Sunday morning, he liked it. It was beautiful. And Bhagwan was inside the interview room. And then he continued to get busy with the book he had. The interview was over. Bhagwan emerged from the interview room. The session was over, and now Bhagwan came straight to this boy, and Swami started asking those usual questions, you know, which he asks when he wants to begin a conversation. So he asked, so what is your name and where do you come from? And this boy was surprised because he has already given him so many interviews. Someone who knows him through and through has revealed to him so much about him. And now suddenly Swami asked, what is your name and where do you come from? And then Swami then asked, who else came with you from Kashmir? And this boy said, Swami, my mother. And Swami asked, where is your mother? And so this boy, immediately he pointed to the lady's side. And Swami then said, how do you know that she is sitting there? And the boy said, Swami, I saw her. She is sitting there. And Swami said, what did you do when I was in the interview room? And the boy said, Swami, I saw her, I waved at her. And now Swami said, listen boy, once you are a Sai student, you should not look at the lady's side and certainly not wave towards that side. You must know that there are so many people watching you. You have to conduct in a manner that maintains the decorum of being a Sai student. Yes, she is your mother, but others may not know that. So one has to be careful. Don't repeat this. Swami told it very gently and very lovingly. And in fact, in those times, Swami used to always advise the boys that one should in fact look down while walking, so that one's attention is not distracted towards many things and many people. Bhagwan was so keen that one's senses should be restricted to limited information about the outside world, so that it is that much less distracted and that much more easier to control and keep it focused on God. And that one direction from Swami, and in a manner that was apt for this boy, because this boy never liked to be admonished, he never liked to be reprimanded, but he loved anything that came with love. And Bhagwan explained to him with so much of love that it entered straight into his heart, and this boy never repeated that again. And the most important thing is, the lesson he took from there was to always remain focused only on Swami and Swami alone. And it reached to such an extent that towards the end of his 3 years of stay at Bhagwan's lotus feet, one day when he was in a state of contemplation sitting in the mandir, that became such a deep experience. It became a completely meditative state. And in fact, he actually went on to such a deep state that it was almost like samadhi. He felt so light, he felt so fresh, he felt there was no need for food, drink, sleep. He was in bliss, he felt so much lightness, there was light all around, he was so free. He was so much in ananda, he was swimming in that bliss. He was so lost in that ecstasy and he just didn't want to come back from that state. He didn't want to return to normalcy and he was just swimming in that freedom. And it went on and on. And after a long time, Swami actually had to send someone to shake him. And in fact, it was done a couple of times. And actually, another boy went and spoke loudly into his ears, just so that he returns to his normal state. And this boy says that, I have experienced what is samadhi, I've experienced what is that joy. So any joy of this world never attracts me because I have seen what is true joy, what is true freedom. So anything of this world never entices me because I have tasted what is nectar. One who has tasted nectar will not fall for jaggery or sugar. And that is what Krishna does as Gopala. That is what Krishna was doing to the Gopikas and the Gopalas of Vrindavan when he used to sport with them, when he used to do leelas with them. Because they experienced that nectar, they didn't want anything else. And it was the same. It is the same with Bhagwan. What happened with Krishna continues to happen with Sai Krishna. Once he gives us that experience of supreme bliss, you don't want anything else. That is less divine, that is less perfect, that is ephemeral. And this is the reason why he is Gopala. Because he is the one who can truly liberate our beings, who can truly liberate our senses, who can truly take care of our soul, who can grant us perfect happiness, happiness that will last forever. He is the one who is the true liberator of our souls. And that is the reason why he is Gopala. And in this first line, we sing praises and we adore him and say victory to you, victory to such a beautiful, liberating Lord. Jai ho, jai ho, Gopalana. Let's move on to the next line.
Jai ho, jai ho, Narayana.
So here the new word is Narayana. A beautiful incident comes to mind. One of the senior office bearers in the Sai organization shared this story long ago. One day in Whitefield, this person's father, Professor Kasturi, and another gentleman were standing close to Bhagwan. And at a distance, there was another older gentleman with a small bag. And this person who had a bag in his hand wanted to meet Bhagwan. And Bhagwan was very gracious. He allowed this person to come near him. And when he got that opportunity, this old man pulled out some palm leaves and said that those were nadis, which had predictions about Bhagwan. These nadis are palm leaf inscriptions which were written by ancient sages and seers many, many thousands of years ago. We have Shuka Nadi, we have Agastya Nadi, written by the great Sukha Maharshi, Agastya Maharshi, and they had foreseen the events that were to happen thousands of years hence and written down the history of the world, so to say. So this old man who had with him one of these nadis, he went on to explain that in one of those nadis, it was mentioned that Bhagwan is Lord Narayana himself, and he continued to read from the leaves. And as he was doing this, suddenly he stopped and he looked confused. And then he looked hesitatingly at Bhagwan, because in the palm leaves it was written that even as a reader would be reading out the predictions before the Lord in human form, at that very moment in the background thousands of chakras or wheels would make a clinging noise. And when the person read this, he went blank because he could not understand what that meant. But looking at the question mark on his face, Swami smilingly pointed his finger back. And now everyone could hear that train going by, making the rumbling noise of thousands of wheels at that very moment. In fact, genuine nadis are known to make such amazingly accurate predictions. So this person was so overjoyed at the accuracy and the way Bhagwan decoded it for him, he started just offering his rich salutations to Bhagwan repeatedly and telling, Swami, you are verily Lord Narayana, you are the incarnation of the Lord in human form. And as he was going on, Swami asked some of the volunteers there to go and get some eatables for him. So these devotees brought some fruits and sweets, but this old man politely refused everything. He said, Swami, it is Ekadashi day, and this is the day which is dedicated to the worship of Lord Narayana, and I am on a fast on Ekadashi days, so I cannot partake any of these food. Bhagwan said, okay, and then Bhagwan gave him some clothes, and then this person took his blessings and left. After the person went, Swami asked the people around him what they thought about the incident. And everyone exclaimed how accurate the prediction was and how fortunate they were to be in Bhagwan's presence. But Bhagwan said, all of you missed a very important point. Swami said, why does this person observe Ekadashi fasting? He does it to attain Lord Narayana, is it not? The old man believed that I am Narayana himself. But when Narayana himself was giving him the food, he refused to break the fast. Isn't that is what is Maya? He is still thinking he knows, yet he does not know. He is so deluded. Whenever the Lord comes down in a human form, he plays many dramas. But only those who are all the time alert and aware make the most of his physical presence. The Lord is everywhere. That is the reason why he is called Narayana. The same Narayana came down as Satya Narayana, as Bhagwan was called in his childhood days, just so that we can get rid of this Maya, we can get rid of this delusion and keep our concentration always on him and realize the huge blessing that has come our way. So this line is urging us to not get deluded with the creation and the place of the Creator, and concentrate and realize and know the value of having known the Creator. If we sing this line with that awareness that Narayana is with me, he's all the time here, I have had the opportunity to connect with the Lord himself. I think if we sing it with that kind of awareness, this bhajan, this line will elevate us. So in this line we say victory to such a Lord who is all-powerful, all-pervading and omniscient. Let's move on to the next line.
Jaya ho, jaya ho, Janardana.
Janardana, another very beautiful name of Lord Vishnu or Krishna or Narayana. It occurs in the Vishnu Sahasranama too. One meaning is one who destroys the wicked. Second meaning is one who protects people from the wicked. And the third meaning is one who is approached by devotees for their wishes. There is a poignant incident recorded in Loving God, the autobiography of Professor Kasturi. And it shows how Bhagwan does not destroy wicked people, but he destroys the wickedness in people and how he reforms them. Anantappa was a peon who worked under Professor Kasturi in one of the colleges where he was employed. Though not very bright and sharp in worldly affairs, he was greatly devoted to Bhagwan. On one occasion, when Professor Kasturi was leaving from Puttaparthi, Bhagwan gave him a big-sized photograph of himself and said, take this and place it in the shrine of Anantappa. Anantappa was living in a mud house amidst about 100 such dwellings. His son and daughters rendered bhajans in an 8 feet by 6 feet little room. Professor Kasturi installed the portrait given by Bhagwan in that shrine. And Professor Kasturi says that it soon became a little prashantinilayam. Anantappa would just be lost in silent meditation or conversing with Bhagwan on all that worried him. He was very, very devoted to him. One daughter of Anantappa was wedded to an employee of the Mysore Railways, and they lived in one of the less equipped suburbs of Bangalore. This man, unfortunately, kept doubting his wife. if his wife even looked out of the window, he would suspect her. And he would always ill-treat her. In fact, he kept her like a prisoner in his dark home and often was violent towards her. Anantappa tried in so many ways to soften him and try and bring harmony in that family, but everything proved futile. So one day this poor wife told her husband, "Whatever I say, you don't believe. You all the time doubt me. You do this. You take me to Baba and you ask him. If Baba says that I am a faithful wife, then you keep me. But if Baba also doesn't, then I shall immediately put an end to my life." So Anantappa and his wife went over to Bangalore and accompanied the daughter and son-in-law to Puttaparthi. Bhagwan told the hard-headed son-in-law during the interview that the girl was very pure. Swami said she was as pure as Sita. And when this husband heard this, he somehow did not like it. It was too much for him to swallow. He actually lost his temper and he charged the girl with infidelity and he was only becoming more violent. So Bhagwan gently pushed him out of the room and closed the door. And Bhagwan told Anantappa, "Don't worry, I know how to correct him. He is a good fellow. They are going to live happily. I will take care." So this entire group reached Penukonda too late to catch the day train. So they stayed on at the station itself until midnight. The son-in-law discreetly stayed apart and he was chewing his rage against these gurus and godmen and, you know, he was thinking how to do a tit for tat for these people. And finally the train arrived and Anantappa and his wife and his daughter, they went into a third class compartment. That is how the son-in-law arranged it. He didn't want to stay in that third class compartment. He just loaded them there and he went to the guard because he was a railway employee. He wanted to go to the first class coach because it was a train which was not very occupied. The first class coach was empty. So he told the guard that no first class passenger would board the train during night. So he happily went and rested in the first class coach. And he was anyway traveling free because he was a railway employee. The rest of the story was told by the guard himself on a later occasion to Professor Kasturi. When the train pulled up an hour and a half later at a particular station, this son-in-law, who was in the first-class coach, suddenly leaped out and he was in great pain. He was shouting, he was wailing, "Ayo, ayo, ayo," he was shouting. And in fact, his cheeks were red. He was massaging his cheeks and his back. He was in such trauma. So the guard ran to him, all the porters ran towards him. What happened? There was actually a sizable crowd around him because he was in so much pain. So I asked him, "You are the only one in the coach. There is nobody else in the coach. Who did anything to you? Who is it that slapped you? Your cheeks are so red." And this son-in-law now, between sobs and groans, he said, "I don't know what happened when the train was still running. Suddenly the lights in my compartment came on and I didn't know what was happening. I sat up on the bed and suddenly the whole place became red. It became deep red and I saw Baba coming there. Baba filled the entire compartment with his aura and then he started beating me. In fact, he was thrashing me from all sides and he kept telling, 'Won't you believe me when I say that your wife is innocent? Stop beating her. She is my child.' And he kept thrashing me black then blue. And only when the son-in-law realized his mistake, Swami disappeared and then everything became white. This incident completely changed the son-in-law. He admitted his fault, he apologized for his impudence and he confessed that later that he really deserved that chastisement from Bhagwan. In fact, he became so good as a family man that henceforth, the moment he would get the salary, he would come and give it to his wife and they would then together decide how to run the family. And he would take very little as his pocket money. So that is how the Lord is Janardana. He knows how to remove the wickedness in us. And for different people, he has different treatments. If you don't learn the normal way, the easy way, he will teach you the hard way. But he will ensure that you become pure. You become better. Victory to such a beautiful, compassionate, patient Lord, Janardana. That is what is conveyed in this line. Let's move on to the last line.
Jaya ho, Niranjana.
Niranjana is one who is without any blemish. We often describe the Lord as lotus-eyed one, the lotus-armed one, the one with the lotus feet, and it is because anything that falls on the lotus just falls down. Nothing ever attaches to the lotus leaf, and it's the same with the Lord. So many people have tried to deride Swami, denigrate Swami, right from the time He declared His avatarhood, but nothing ever can touch the purity of Bhagwan. Nothing ever has affected the purity of Rama or Krishna. People may say how many ever things they want, but the moon may have a blemish, but the Lord is absolutely blemishless. And that is why He is Niranjana. And when we are devoted to Him, He will ensure that we too become blemishless. Victory to such a Lord who is the purest of the pure. That is what is conveyed in Jai Ho Niranjana. So with that, to some extent we have discussed the meaning of every word of this bhajan. We can go on. There are so many beautiful anecdotes to substantiate every word, every appellation of the Lord. It is for us to reflect on them. It is for us to relate to them. And it is for us to internalize them and use them for our upliftment. Let's now sing this bhajan once again as it is sung in the Sanctum Sanctorum in Prashantinilayam. To the end of the current episode of Radio Sai Vintage Bhajan Classroom. Dear listeners, please feel free to write to us and tell us what you feel about this program, any improvements you would like in this program, any suggestions, any feedback. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. With heart full of gratitude, we offer this endeavor at the lotus feet of our most beautiful, beloved Bhagwan.